listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Lori Boyer. On this week's episode of Walnut Wednesday, California Walnut Board's Jennifer Williams will talk about the Power of Three Omega-3 Consumption Campaign. And coming up in the show today, we'll hear about pistachio research priorities. And it all begins with a check-in of regional news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
In regional agricultural news today, according to the United States Department of Agriculture National Agricultural Statistics Service, in a Pacific Region Milk Production Report, milk production during February totaled 3,322 million pounds, down 0.2% from February of 2021 and down 6% from January of 2022. The number of milk cows on farms in California was at 1,721,000 head. That is up 1,000 head from February of 2021 and from January of 2022. Production per cow in California averaged 1,930 pounds, down 5 pounds from February of 2021 and down 125 pounds from January of 2022. The U.S. Apple Association has released its new publication. It's called the Pollinator Best Management Practices for Apples. The publication, created in partnership with the Honeybee Health Coalition, can be viewed and downloaded at usapple.org. Apples are an important pollinator-dependent crop grown for commercial production on 295,000 acres in the U.S. As growers respond to greater demands for advancements in sustainability, U.S. Apple believes this document will be a valuable tool. Pollinator Best Management Practices for Apples provides guidance for U.S. growers and regulators on pollinator protection in orchards. The document considers practical production needs and suggests elements of an outreach and education program to foster adoption and implementation of identified practices. The goal of the work is to increase understanding within the U.S. apple growing community of the benefits and opportunities around protecting pollinators, while also recognizing the need to protect the crop from pest damage. With the grim news about the California water situation, California Fresh Fruit Association President Ian LeMay points out the present circumstances are different from previous drought cycles, such as 2009 to 2011 and 2012 to 2016, where they were able to argue over whether the water is allocated, for example, agricultural allotments versus environmental uses, such as sending the water through the San Joaquin Delta to preserve endangered species. The present situation truly is due to a lack of precipitation. LeMay says that they had significant snowfall in December, which was great. However, it's not clear how much of that snowfall will result in runoff. Last year, he says state water models were wrong in predicting 800,000 more acre feet in runoff than was actually realized. Precipitation overlay burn areas from wildfires, so the runoff did not materialize. LeMay points to a report issued recently by the California Department of Food and Agriculture estimating that the economic impact of last year's drought was a loss of $1.7 billion and nearly 15,000 full and part-time jobs. Some 395,000 acres were fallowed. As for fruit growers, many of his members are already going through cultural practices necessary to grow this year's crop. He said he has not seen fruit growers pulling acreage out of production to any great degree at this point, but they are in a situation that will be tough and will direct members to make very tough decisions. LeMay does not see that any particular fruit commodity has been affected more than others. They all take relatively similar amounts of annual irrigation. Many of the members have invested in efficient irrigation practices to utilize every molecule of water available to them. Regionally, it is a matter of which water district growers find themselves in and whether they have senior water rights. Even senior water rights holders may find themselves in trouble. Much of California's water supply is transferred from Lake Shasta in the state's extreme north, south through the California Aqueduct, and there is currently not enough water in Shasta to fulfill senior water rights, according to LeMay, adding that some 20 million Californians get a portion of water through that system. There's one more factor that makes this drought cycle different. He says it is the first time that the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act passed in 2014 has been in effect, which limits the amount of groundwater that growers can pump. Full implementation of the act will take place by 2040. He points to one policy estimate saying that 1 million acres will be taken out of production if SGMA is implemented without mitigation. Residents of the coastal metropolises, who constitute a majority of California's population, to regard the drought as someone else's problem, but this could be the year they realize where the state finds itself. Quite frankly, he says, his members grow fresh fruit, an agricultural commodity that everyone in the world should consume at a high quality under some of the most rigorous regulations in the world. And he says they need more advocates and more supporters in the urban areas. The Pacific Coast Food Waste Commitment has announced that Sodexo U.S. and Walmart U.S. have publicly committed to support and work towards PCFWC's goal to reduce and prevent food waste by 50% along the west coast of the United States by the year 2030 as a climate change solution. The partnership builds on the longstanding efforts of both companies to reduce food loss and waste through their operations, while also hoping to inform and inspire their business peers through the sharing of data and best practices. Food waste is responsible for approximately 4% of greenhouse gas emissions in the United States, the same amount generated by 21% of cars on the road. The PCFWC is one of the largest public-private partnerships dedicated to food waste production, bringing together food businesses and local jurisdictions on the West Coast to reduce food waste in accordance with national and international sustainability targets. The participation of these two industry leaders will enhance the effort in important ways, both through their work to reduce waste throughout their own operations and through their influence on suppliers and other partners up and down the value chain. Importantly, it will also serve as a model for collaboration for other businesses who are considering committing to the PCFWC, and sends a strong signal to the industry that partnering with other businesses in a pre-competitive format is an important way to target and act to reduce food waste. The California Sustainable Groundwater Management Act is already challenging growers. Stuart Wolf, president and CEO of Wolf Farming and Processing, a family-owned business processing commodities, including almonds and tomatoes.
Some of the areas that are considered high-risk areas are kicking in next year. They're starting down their path. So like in Westlands, we're going to start implementing their plan. And in Westlands, they hope to get to a sustainable level of pumping within 10 years. The state generally is saying it's a 20-year process, but it's going faster in Westlands. The board has decided, let's get there earlier.
Wolf says they are thinking long-term.
Historically, if we got shorted, maybe because of drought or the way the feds were managing the water system and we had a reduction in surface water, we could make it up through pumping. In wet years, we wouldn't pump. So if you now limit our ability to pump and you limit our ability to get surface water, it just makes the whole system a lot more unreliable and you have fewer options.
Wolf says the legislation is going to dictate what they plant.
We are going to be planting fewer permanent crop acres under SGMA because, you know, we don't want to get in a position where we have to do what we're doing now, pulling out trees.
Stuart Wolf, president and CEO of Wolf Farming and Processing.
That was Lori Boyer with today's regional ag news. We'll be right back with our first segment of the day right after this.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
According to a study published in the Nutrition Journal, more than 90% of Americans aren't getting enough omega-3s in their diet. Last week, the California Walnut Commission announced their third annual Power of Three global marketing campaign to increase awareness about the benefits of omega-3s and to highlight how walnuts are an excellent source of plant-based omega-3 ALA, or alpha-linolenic acid. California Walnut Board's Jennifer Williams agreed that walnuts' source of omega-3 makes it a marketable item.
As many people know, walnuts are the only tree nut to contain a significant amount of plant-based omega-3, which research does indicate may play a role in heart health, brain health, and healthy aging. Now, there are three forms of omega-3, EPA and DHA, as well as the plant-based ALA. And we have found that much of the research is on the DHA and EPA, but ALA is an important factor as well. We've had several scientific reviews and other studies showing the role of ALA specifically in heart health, that it can definitely reduce total cholesterol and all kinds of help around heart health. There's also been studies around brain health, and healthy aging, including the famous Mediterranean diet PREDIMED study that has shown that the Mediterranean diet really does help with those who have suffered heart attacks in the past and can help them live longer, causing a reduced risk of all-cause mortality.
The recommended daily intake of plant-based omega-3 ALA is 1.6 grams per day for men and 1.1 grams per day for women, and walnuts can supplement this easily.
Walnuts have 2.5 grams per ounce, so we do recommend 1 ounce per day, which is really just a handful. Or a quarter cup, and that can be incorporated in a variety of ways. And that's the brilliant thing about our Power of Three program, is that we are really showing not only the benefits of omega-3, but we're showing consumers how to incorporate walnuts into their daily diets as part of meals, different meals from breakfast to lunch, dinners and snacks, as well as, you know, the ease and versatility of incorporating walnuts into their daily lives.
This year's Power of Three omega-3 consumption campaign will look a bit different from the last 2 years, in the sense that it will take place in March instead of February to capitalize on the full month.
This year, we are once again taking consumers on a culinary adventure around the world. Each country has developed a different recipe, and these recipes are then leveraged by all the other markets, again, to really showcase walnuts across a variety of culinary types. Each market uses many of the same elements, but then also customizes activities to really fit their unique situation. Some will feature retail promotions, advertising, but all of them are really focusing on plant-based recipe or plant-forward recipes and videos. And then consumers are really able to easily create a multicultural dining experience right at home.
The program will also look to capitalize on the previous two successful campaigns and continue to promote omega-3 as the product's differentiator.
And, you know, with the rise of plant-forward eating, this has been a really great way to share how walnuts really fit into a variety of meal parts, no matter what the cuisine. Part of the program is asking consumers to share how they are doing more for their health with the hashtag #ShareThePowerOfThree. And it's always exciting to see how consumers share their personal experiences with California Walnuts. And we've seen this really take on a whole new life. As you know, we have programs in specific markets, but we have seen media activity in markets where we're not active, like New Zealand, Portugal, France, and Argentina. So this is really taking on a greater life around the world. And it's really exciting to see how that's taken off.
The campaign will be virtual again this year and will continue to focus on the international markets.
Scene has shifted to a more online presence with the campaign this year, as due to the shifts in budget that we've made due to the change in marketing order, which has resulted in the California Walnut Board not collecting assessments. The marketing budget has seen some shifts. And so we've moved a lot of our programs online. So we are definitely participating domestically with the Power of Three, but each and every market around the world is also participating using the US recipe we developed through our influencer. And our influencer is posting about it and on Instagram here in the US. But then we're also posting from here in the US all the other recipes from around the world too. So we're each leveraging all the recipes that each of the other countries has produced.
That was our first segment of the day. Next, we'll hear Lori Boyer with today's National Ag News.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
In National Agricultural News, House Ag top Republican and possible next chair of the Ag Committee, Glenn G.T. Thompson, spoke about the next farm bill and other agricultural issues.
If things would flip and we would come in the majority, I'm looking forward to bringing all members, encouraging all members, Republicans and Democrats, be able to make visits to feedlots and processing sites. And, you know, because you learn so much doing that. And that's always been a part of the Farm Bill process.
Which Thompson argues needs to be speeded up.
We've got a deadline when this current Farm Bill expires, and that's September 30th, 2023.
And Thompson is already highlighting differences with Democrats.
We don't need a climate change title in the Farm Bill. And I'll be honest with you, what we need to do is give credit to the American ranchers, farmers, foresters for what they do. You know, for too long, there's been a bullseye right on the back of all these folks, these families that work so hard to provide us food and fiber that says climate criminal. And it's so wrong.
Thompson credits farmers for a cleaner environment and says crop insurance, greatly expanded since 2018, will be a top priority for him.
We have to always be worried about unintended consequences, and that's one of the issues with these mandates. You know, when the affected industry doesn't quite agree on the exact problem, defining the problem, first of all, or the extent of the problem, and then it really becomes even more difficult to find that silver bullet or solution by way of a government program or a mandate.
But Thompson defends the Ag Committee's bipartisan reputation, pointing to consensus on other issues, including access to rural broadband. The nation's food security is a big concern within the U.S. Department of Agriculture. USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack says the agency is also concerned about nutrition security.
What is nutrition security? We know what food security means. We know what it means in terms of being able to provide folks sufficient resources to be able to go to the grocery store and be able to buy what they need to feed their family. But what does it mean to be nutritionally secure? Well, I think it means a consistent access, not a once in a while, but a consistent access to food that's obviously healthy, as well as safe and affordable. Food that is designed to provide optimal health benefits and the well-being of those consuming it.
He says nutrition security concerns grew during the COVID-19 pandemic.
We learned from this pandemic the linkage between nutrition security and health. It was surprising to me, and maybe it was surprising to some of you, that two-thirds of the COVID-related hospitalizations that occurred and are occurring have been related to obesity, diabetes, hypertension, heart failure. These are all diet-related conditions. Stated another way, poor nutrition is connected to the leading cause of illnesses that take over 600,000 lives every year.
Diet-related diseases don't just affect individual health, they also have an economic and financial cost.
There's an economic cost to poor nutrition. Just take diabetes, just one, $147 billion. That's roughly equivalent to the entire budget of the Department of Agriculture on just one diet-related disease. And don't take into consideration the loss of productivity, the loss of quality of life connected to diet-related diseases. So COVID was essentially a wake-up call.
Vilsack says the agency is taking steps to integrate nutrition security into its food support programs.
I mentioned the review of the Thrifty Food Plan. Part of the reason we did this is that we surveyed folks, and what we found was that at the end of the month, the people who were receiving supplemental nutrition assistance, at the end of the month, they were making tough decisions. They weren't in a position financially to be able to decide whether or not to buy that fruit and vegetable that they knew they wanted to buy but couldn't. So we looked at the Thrifty Food Plan and we increased it. We're looking for ways to improve the WIC package, constantly looking at ways in which we take the science and make sure that we expand and change and transform that WIC package and expand the knowledge and awareness of WIC so that more who are qualified for the program participate in the program, and when they do, that they have a wide range within this package that exposes them to fruits and vegetables that they might not otherwise ever know.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack. U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai talks about some of the focal points in the first of a series of U.S.-United Kingdom trade dialogues that are taking place this week in the United States.
Secretary Trevelyan and I, along with our respective teams, will seek to identify concrete steps to advance the U.S.-UK trade relationship. These meetings will cover a range of topics, including strengthening the protection of labor rights and the environment with one another and with our trading partners, ensuring that our trade policies support our domestic domestic investments and build stronger, more competitive workforces. Complementing our efforts to decarbonize our economies, increase the use of green technology, and promote environmentally sustainable trade practices. Promoting gender and racial equality by using global trade to lift up entrepreneurs and business owners. And building strong, durable supply chains that can withstand future global shocks.
Once again, U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai. A year ago, the average buyer was about 240 miles from the seller for a listing. This year, it's 305 miles. That is a 27% increase, according to Big Iron Listings. And the wild increases in the value of the used equipment may be helping make decisions for some farmers, especially those who were eyeing retirement in the next 5 or so years.
The California Walnut Conference is back. Mark your calendars for April 7th and 8th. At the Yuba Center Fairgrounds. This growing event has become the gem of Northern California Ag and brings walnut industry professionals together from across the Golden State. Be part of the experience and learn about new technologies, research, and meet with other ag insiders at the premier walnut conference in California. Register today at wcngg.com/events. The California Walnut Conference is powered by your top news resources in California, West Coast Nut, Progressive Crop Consultant, and My Ag Life.
California Pistachio Research Board Director Bob Klein has dealt with a number of issues plaguing the pistachio industry during his multi-decade career. At the beginning, it was blight, and nowadays it's aflatoxin and even ochratoxin. Blight was the challenge that made the industry need a pistachio research director originally, and aflatoxin plagued the industry back then as well, amongst other issues.
When we think we turn a corner on it, then we find there's another one. It's almost like a maze, you know. Maybe at some point we'll meet the minotaur of aflatoxin.
Maybe ochratoxin is that.
Right. So that's an ongoing one. But pistachio bushy top was a concern in the rootstocks we had back around 2011. And you know, it's in that case, I don't know that we really had a solution other than they stopped producing the one that had the problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, particular growers did have problems because they were hit with the impact of it. But those are the biggest ones. You know, as we've grown as an industry. You know, when we only had 100,000 acres or so, the variability in soil types and climate were not like we have now. So making sure we have a research program that addresses the variability across the board in the industry is always going to be a challenge.
The pistachio industry has seen bushy top syndrome disappear almost entirely due to research efforts.
We don't hear about it. Nobody talks about it. Nobody has an issue. There's no problems with grafting, you know, budding or anything like that. So it's disappeared. It says something for clonal control and what you have to do to make sure that your clones don't become adversely affected. But it just opened up people's eyes to what potential problems there can be.
While pistachios are a profitable commodity with a low assessment rate, the industry has had challenges continuing research on a consistent basis over the years, although it is well equipped to do so, Klein said.
We've reached a size where we have the resources to do what we need to do. One of the problems that we'll always have is making sure that we have adequate numbers of research personnel. And that across the board from at the UC, CSU's campuses, USDA. So trying to attract people to work on pistachios and then keep them engaged is always going to be a trick.
Looking to present issues, even ones that might just be on the horizon, the industry has had its bouts with aflatoxin, but is now possibly going to struggle with ochratoxin A as the EU looks to push regulations to check for it.
Most buyers in most countries, OTA isn't on their radar. It's not a concern for them. They follow more of the US attitude towards these things of, let's determine whether there's a human health impact, mm-hmm. And the EU has the more the approach of this falls into a group of things we call toxins, so therefore it's automatically bad unless you can prove otherwise. Well, try to prove a negative. We know how that goes in science. So there's always going to be, they're always going to claim we need to have regulation because they're scared.
If the regulation that the EU is proposing for okra toxin levels and checking them goes into effect, there's no question that it will have an effect on the pistachio industry.
It will mean almost immediately that all the processors will have to test for OTA going into the EU. We don't know what the testing method is yet, but that adds, you know, you say it doesn't add that much, but it's still another $200 to every shipment that goes. Then you have the risk of rejection when it gets to the EU if they test it, and that risk will be equal and additive to the aflatoxin risk. So when we get things down to an acceptable risk, we'll say a 5% risk for aflatoxin, we're still going to have then now a new 5% for OTA, which means 10% of our lots get rejected. So it's just going to add to that, and that uncertainty of whether a lot's going to make it or not now doubles, and it makes it harder to market and ship.
Klein reflected on his career as a whole in pistachio research by noting that it's easy to work with growers that make a profitable commodity, making it easier to do what needs to be done to solve issues in the industry.
We've always come at it from being in a profitable position. So it's protecting those profits. And it's been much like a large family. Many of them are family farms, or we do have lots of corporate growers, but still the management, local management, is more like a family. I like the way that the research board has been set up. William F. Buckley once said that he'd rather be governed by the first 200 names in the Boston phone book than by the faculty of Harvard. And there's a lot of wisdom in the industry growers. So that's where the governance has to come from, and that's where the best place for it to come from is.
This is Taylor Charlstrom reporting for the My Ag Life Daily News Report.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.